Hey, yo, what up? It's Force of Philip on the track, yo. People want cards to get banned all the time, bro, but people can play whatever they want, bro. Play whatever you want.
Jack Faden's gluten faithlessly like he's an atheist. Call him the greatest thief in the multi-mist of the blind eternities. He's got them red hands from handling the masterpieces off your mantles and dancing down your chimneys like he's Saint Nick, and he's eating milk and cookies cause my man loves dessert. He fights off nickel bolts on Ravnica to take what he's earned, but an untimely death is ultimately why he was served. Cling to the Dust Assassin's trophy confirmed.
We lost a good one today. Jack Faden was my boy. You cooked a bomb-ass omelet. I love that conditioner he used. But don't forget,
you can play whatever you want.
Cause this is Strifle Pile. Playing 25 colors, this game gon' take a while.
You can play whatever you want.
Cause this is Strifle Pile. Playing 48 colors, this game gon' take a while.
You can play whatever you want.
Cause this is Strifle Pile. Playing 69 colors, this game gon' take a while.
You can play whatever you want.
Cause this is Strifle Pile.
Play whatever you want.
You can play with baleful tricks in the strife, a bag of tricks, but don't you think you'd be remiss if you missed the fourth ponder in this 27 color deck, playing drown in the lock. This is Magic the Gathering, designed by Jackson Pollock. It's like a Rhystic Studies Vince lead itself up for a game, a colorful array, the mana base remains unexplained. Ice Fang, Notion, Thief, Golos, the Tireless Pilgrim, Toxic, Deluge, Punish, Fire, Cephalid, Colosseum, Yorion, Opposition, Agent, Rise and Fall, Fatal, Push, Pyroblast, Lightning, Bolt, Uro, Waterlog, Grub, Endurance, Minskin, Blue, Fury, Passage, Endures, Brazen, Borrower, Badlands, Bayou, Kara, Puta, Flowers, Pernicious, Deep, Tiger, Otawara, Sovereign, the Mirthless, Plague, Engineer, Terra, Sunder, yo, I think this is working, play a Wasteland, Loam, Bat, loot it away with your deck, put a whole breach on the stack, attack on Meltdown, Artifacts.
You can play whatever you want.
Cause this is Strifle Pile. Playing 25 colors, this game gon' take a while.
You can play whatever you want.
Cause this is Strifle Pile. Playing 48 colors, this game gon' take a while.
You can play whatever you want.
Cause this is Strifle Pile. Playing 69 colors, this game gon' take a while.
You can play whatever you want.
Cause this is Strifle Pile.
Play whatever you want.
What it do?
Hello and welcome to Eternal Turtles. I'm your host, Zach Clark, and with me as always, Force of Phil Blackman. Force of Phil Blackman, how are you?
Yo, dude, are the leaks over?
So it doesn't seem like it. There's a lot of leaks. Like, this whole ship is sinking over there at WotC. Between the OGL stuff, I don't know if you know anything about any of that stuff, Phil. The OGL stuff is like a whole nother thing. The internet's ablaze with that. Like, even my mainstream YouTube channels are talking about the OGL leak. We're not going to talk about that because that has nothing to do with Magic the Gathering.
I know not about it, but I do know that it feels, I don't know anything, let's be real, but the spoilers, I feel like, are amazing press, right?
Yeah,
it's weird. It's spoiled, and then all of the press is all about the spoilers, and then everybody's eyes are on the set, like, if anything, like, spoilers don't seem negative. Like, I get, like, they're negative from they have, like, their presentations and everything is mapped out and all that stuff, and that sucks, obviously. Hyping up the set, I don't feel like it necessarily detracts from it, because it's like, oh, wow, spoilers? Wow, the last time there was spoilers was also during a Phyrexia set, and that got a bunch of people banned, and it's just like, the whole thing, it's like, it's pretty narratively flavorful, since the whole set is callbacks from the previous time we were at Scars. Like, every single card is a throwback.
Yeah. You think they'd be able to find out the person with that fingernail at the at the plant, you know? Like, everyone, show me your fingernails.
The other thing that I was like, when there were I didn't know at first that the spoilers were spoilers. I thought that, like, more cards were just coming out. When every single week is spoiler season,
yeah.
Who knows when leaks are happening? I don't know.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. So, So obviously we're going to be talking about Phyrexia, all the spoiled cards so far, which is almost all of them. We're missing like 7 cards or 8 cards, I think, at this point.
We're missing a blue mythic. I know that.
Okay. Well, that's a thing to talk about later on. But we've got what? Like, we've got 23 cards to talk about, 24 cards to talk about, at least, if Phil might add a couple to it. But we've got a lot of cards to talk about, some interesting stuff for Legacy. Before we get all into that, I want to just ask everybody to comment, like, and subscribe. To the video, that really helps us out, helps get the Al Gore rhythm going, and that's a big part of the thing. We've got 2 more winners from the comment and Patreon thing. Looks like 2018 and 2013s will be going out this week. Our first couple of people that one have started to get their cards, which is very exciting to me. But yeah, if you comment, we add your name to a list and we draw a card out of the Magic the Gathering countdown set, which we have still a lot of cards left. The Mox Chrome is still, or the Chrome Mox is still in there. And yeah, so, one, just comment because there's a lot of stuff to comment about, right? Like there's a lot, we're going to talk about 24 cards, 23 cards, and you're going to have opinions. So you might as well share those opinions with us. That might help lend to some more content for us in the future. Not to mention, we just like interacting with people. It's a lot of fun. I make sure to respond to all the comments. So commenting is huge. Liking is huge. Subscribing is the hugest, obviously. And you can always check us out if you want to just support the cast directly on Patreon.com. Patreon.com/EternalDurtles. Without too much further ado, Phil, let's talk about the first card from this set.
So you want to talk about, we'll get to the Hellraiser, but let's talk about Vraska real quick.
Oh, we're going to jump the gun going right to Vraska.
We're going to jump the gun. So right. Vraska is part of the completed cycle of Planeswalkers. Completed is a Planeswalker mechanic that uses Phyrexian mana. If you use, so part of their casting cost is Phyrexian mana. If you decide to pay life instead of mana for those costs, they enter with two fewer loyalty for every Phyrexian mana that you paid. So in the case of Vraska, it's 4 and a black and a Phyrexian mana, so 6 mana total, but it can come down for 5. If you pay the full 6, it comes in with 6 loyalty. If you pay 5 and a Phyrexian mana, it comes in with 4 loyalty. Cool. Yes. The 0 is you draw a card, lose 1 life, and proliferate. Pretty sweet. It's effectively a +1. -2 is target creature becomes a treasure token. And then -9 is target player effectively loses the game. Cool. If you get to the -9, congratulations. Vraska, the thing though is that like as a 5 mana, it's in the fast mana colors, right? There already is like at the SCG New Jersey, there already was a mono black like Helm combo deck that is spamming fast mana to put difficult stuff to deal with in play.
Like Lake of the Dead and Dark Ritual and stuff.
No, it was playing like Chrome Moxen and, you know, it was playing all the fast mana. And it was playing Dothy Voidwalker and Helm and all this stuff, right?
I see.
Leyline of the Void, right? So it's pre-boarded against a bunch of decks that are just soft to Leyline of the Void effects. So, you know, I know in the finals, like, he got to beat up on Cephalid Breakfast. If he's playing against Delver and just puts a Leyline into play, like, they're never casting their Murktide, so you buy a bunch of time. Their DRCs never become 3/3s. Their threat suite is just really anemic at that point, right?
Yeah.
So you get a bunch of free wins against decks that care about the graveyard, and then you struggle against stuff that doesn't care about the graveyard at all. What Vraska does is the minus, now I get it's a -2 and not a +, so it is very different, but it's in a fast mana color, and its -2 is very similar to what Oko's +1 to Elk something was, where you just turn you just take a creature that's on the board and you lose all abilities. And then whenever it's on the board, like Oko was a +, right? It was obviously a design mistake. But when Oko's on the board, it effectively blanked you from playing creatures, right? Like abilities no longer mattered. The only thing that mattered was power and toughness. And if it only mattered if it was more than, if it was less than 3/3, because then they would upgrade it. Or if it had counters on it, right? Because then the 3/3 would hold on to those counters. With Vraska's Sting, Vraska's -2 is turn something into a treasure token. That means that it's, you know, unlike Oko, where it was a 3/3 that now you could swing in, this is giving them, it's fixing their mana. But at the same time, it does mean that, like, while Vraska's on the table, like, their creatures suck, right? Like, they need an ETB, and they need it to matter immediately because they're not going to be able to attack with it. The draw card loses a life on a blank board if they can't play creatures. Like, the play pattern of, okay, well, I can't play a creature because then she just turns into a treasure token. And if I don't play creatures, then they just draw cards and eventually get to this ultimate. So the fact that it's in fast mana colors, like, I won't be surprised when I lose to this card.
Okay.
You know? Do I think it's going to be everywhere? No, but there is an effective mono black deck that has shown up, that has put up results, that is pretty routine. And if they try this card, I wouldn't be surprised, particularly because it only costs 1 black. So their ancient 2 manas, like, that's all game. You know, like, you can just turn 2 this off of 2 soul lands plus Lotus Petal or Chrome Mox or whatever, you know. So, like,
I could throw it into you're telling me to throw it into my 8 cast deck.
I mean, I wouldn't go that far. I imagine that the deck would want some, like, they're printing, and we'll get to them, but they're printing a bunch of stuff that you can poison your opponent outside of combat.
Yeah.
And there's some cards that are incidentally good that also happen to poison your opponent. If any of those cards are good to actually turn on Vasca Betrayal's ultimate as a win condition, because her win condition is she gives you 9 poison counters. If you don't have 9 poison counters, it just gives you 9. So yeah, you need a 10th. And I feel like
you can proliferate and the game is proliferate. Over.
Yeah. And you put, so if there's any of those cards just to end the game in that way, and then you're just like really threat light. And so you can play more interaction, et cetera, et cetera. I won't be surprised when I lose to this. I think it's pretty good.
Yeah. All right. Well, so that was the first card. Be on the lookout for Vraska Betrayal Sting. All right. So next up we have Capricious Hellrider. Capricious Hellrider is a 6-mana.
Hellraiser. Three... Hellraiser, bro.
Hellraiser. Sorry. Hellrider's a different guy. Hellraiser. Capricious Hellraiser is a 6-mana creature, Phyrexian Dragon. It is 3 colorless and 3 red, and it reads, this spell costs 3 colorless less to cast if you have 9 or more cards in your graveyard. It's flying. It's a 4-4, and it says, when Hellraiser enters the battlefield, exile 3 cards at random from your graveyard, choose a non-creature, non-land card from among them, and copy it. You may cast that copy without paying its mana cost.
So I'm getting a lot of hype, but I don't get it.
I specifically bring this up because it falls into that ham sandwich category for like Blood Moon decks. Once you get the Blood Moon down, you can, you know, if it's effective against your opponent, this is just another different thing that you could do.
No.
And it might be gaining you some sort of advantage. I don't think it is the choice thing to be doing, but it is another option for the late game stuff, only because it's 3 mana. Now, I do understand that those decks are pip mana light, so I don't think that this is going to be, the thing to do. Like, would you probably better off casting Goblin Rabble Master?
But, 9 cards in a graveyard?
Well, the 9 cards in a graveyard is not impossible to pull off. And it's not something like, this is a one of at best. It's just an advantage thing.
When we return to see how our predictions for cards comes back, if you think that this is randomly a one-up, I'll take the under on 0.5.
okay.
I don't think this card's going to see play anywhere.
Well, 4-4 this is what I say about all those decks. It's like you can win with a ham sandwich, and this card is effectively a ham sandwich.
I think that this is there are so many tastier ham sandwiches out there.
Oh, I don't disagree with you. All right, so the next card we've got is Vindictive Flame Stoker. Vindictive Flame Stoker is, let me find it real fast.
It's a Phyrexian Wizard, cost of 1 red mana. It's a 1/2. It says whenever you cast a non-creature spell, put an oil counter on it, and then 6 and a red, sacrifice it, discard your hand, then draw 4 cards. This ability costs 1 less for each oil counter on it. When I first saw this card and shared it with you, I was like, oh, this seems hot. This is cool. This is interesting. And then I remember that DRC exists. And
yes, that
this
yes.
card. So this card doesn't actually get any benefit out of the oil counters. It just gets a discount on its sacrifice ability.
Correct.
So if you're actually cashing this in all the way to draw 4 cards, that would mean that you've cast 6 spells and this has survived as a 1/2 across that whole time.
Yes.
Now, don't get me wrong. There are worlds where you might pay 2 or 3 mana and sacrifice it and draw 4, but you have to discard your hand. You're in a position. I think that this card, if it shows up, it's part of a combo deck, right? Mm-hmm. It's part of a deck that's just spamming a shit ton, paying red, drawing 4. And then part of that is just like stringing them together and then like using this as like cheap draw 4s as you're like spamming Storm, right? Like there's that world. I don't see this as a world where you're just going to play this as a 1/2 in your fair deck because by the time this goes off, you're dead. Like the format's too fast. Like, again, it's another symptom of like, maybe this card before Modern Horizons 2, but like post Modern Horizons 2 era, I think it's too slow.
I think on my initial read for this card, I did not read Sacrifice Vindictive Flamestoker.
I think if there were more cards that cared about oil counters, like if there were actually good payoffs for oil counters that mattered, that were really good, that were like, wow, this card's amazing if you just have a good oil counter generator. This is the best oil counter generator in the set, right?
Yeah.
Just every time you cast a spell, put an oil counter on it. Like, if there was a way to actually abuse oil counters, this was the card to do it. But there isn't, and I don't think that this card is fast enough. Go back a couple years, maybe we're talking, because, like, Bomat Courier was around and had some splash damage and did some things. But, and you know, this is similar to, in my mind, to what Bomat Courier did, right? Bomat Courier would attack, you'd exile the thing, eventually you'd want to sacrifice it and discard your hand and draw whatever cards were underneath it. This is similar in that space, except you can do it without going into combat. So in my mind, it's more powerful, but I think it's too slow.
So next card is bloated contaminator. I'm a little off on some of the placements of these. So Phil, if you happen to see bloated contaminator.
I'm scrolling down and I see Unctus, and Unctus is on our list. So we can talk about Unctus real quick.
Yeah, let's talk about Unctus.
So Unctus is one of those cards where it's only going to be good in the moments where it kills you. And those moments should be few and far between. If ever, that's about it. It's a one blue blue. So 3 mana, 4/4. Other blue creatures you control have, whenever this creature becomes tapped, draw a card, then discard a card. So you loot. Other artifact creatures you control get +1/+1. And then it has a Phyrexian mana activation to say until end of turn, target creature you control becomes a blue artifact in addition to its other types. Activate only as a sorcery. So
I like this as like a possible include in 8 cast, but I also like it as like, I think when I texted you this card, I said, does this make Mox Amber like more playable? Because like, you basically can run like to 16 legends in your like artifacts blue deck.
You're already in that space. If you want to play Mox Amber, you absolutely can. There's no drawback to it other than in multiples it sucks.
And this card's great with Emery too, like, because you're discarding
you're looting. Here's the card that will actually make Unctus playable if it sees play at all. It's a Feto Alchemist from Onslaught. Do you remember this uncommon from Onslaught?
Feto Alchemist from Onslaught taps to produce mana?
No, it taps to it's tap untap target artifact or creature, and then it has
there you, yeah, cares? That was a card in my you can go on Moxfield right now and check out that list. I have a Val and artifact deck that like has the, you know, Baldur's Gate Commander plus background that like is like a kind of not completely CDH, but like kind of a CDH style like combo deck. But that card's cool. I like that card.
So here's what Unctus and a Feto Alchemist do together. A Feto Alchemist, if it's not summoning sick, it says tap, untap target creature or artifact. Can target itself. When it taps, Unctus says loot. So you loot, you target, untap, and then you can loot through your whole deck. With both of them, you do effectively have something similar to Cephalid Breakfast, where Cephalid Breakfast can go turn one Nomads, turn two Cephalid Illusionist, and you're dead, right?
Yeah.
You can mill your library and you can combo out. So it's turn one, turn two. Unctus and a Feto lets you go turn two, turn three. You can go a Feto. If you untap and you pass Unctus and you can go off undisrupted, you can loot through your whole library. Is there a combo to be had by looting your whole deck into your graveyard? I don't know.
Sure. Of course there is. The answer is yes.
My thoughts on what the combo is after you've looted your entire deck. Oh, well, this is 2 mana, 3 mana, and you just have Cephalid Breakfast, which is a proven deck right now. That goes 1 mana, 2 mana. So yeah. I don't think that's why I don't think Unctus is going to show up, because I think it's a worse version of something else. But
yeah, I wouldn't go out of my way to play that combo. But if it's something you can squeeze into a deck that's already good, you know,
your mono blue combo deck with Unctus and a Feto Alchemist. You heard it here.
You can
just go infinite, and you can do it on turn three, and it's delightful. But you specifically need the Feto Alchemist, but Feto Alchemist is a wizard, so you do have step through, the same way that Cephalid Breakfast plays step through.
There you go.
Unctus, you cannot get with it. It is a Phyrexian Vodalken. There isn't a Vodalken.
No job. No job. Nobody wants to work anymore, Phil.
No, nobody wants to work anymore, man. It's unfortunate. It's really unfortunate for Unctus. You know?
You can't. Phyrexian and Vodalken. Vodalken's not a job. Phyrexian's not a job, man. Come on. Get off the couch. Unctus.
Honestly, the fact that we didn't get a power crept Vodalken Shackles in this set is really upsetting.
So I did find Bluted Contaminator is one up from the Vindicted Sunflame Stoker. That is that 4 mana 4/4 with Toxic 1 and Trample. Or sorry, 3 mana 4/4 with Toxic 1 and Trample. That's 2 and a green for a Phyrexian Beast. That's a 4/4. Trample, Toxic 1, and whenever it deals combat damage to a player, proliferate. This is a 4/4 for 3 mana that is all upside.
Yeah, who knew that power and toughness no longer had any influence over a mana cost?
I mean, this card by itself is giving your opponent two poison counters a turn, assuming it gets through. Do I want to play this in Infect? I don't think so. It's just good enough.
Infect got so many better, like, don't get me wrong. Like, this card is a house on rate, but like, yeah, I mean, Infect got so many good additions.
Infect got a lot. There's a lot to evaluate with Infect, and I think one of the next cards we're going to talk about, is going to be a card that you're going to want to talk about in that. The next card, though, is Kemba Ka Enduring. Kemba Ka Enduring is a 2 mana that's 1 and a white cat cleric that is a 2/2. Whenever it enters the battlefield, or a cat enters the battlefield under your control, attach up to one target equipment to that creature. Equipped creatures get +1/+1, and you can pay 5 mana to make a cat creature, which is just extra text. So this could create a like a Hammer Time style deck, right?
So here's the thing. I don't have any experience playing Hammer Time, but the fact that you can go turn one Hammer, turn two Kemba, and now you have a 12-12 on the table.
12-12 or something.
That is a very similar amount of play pattern to trying to put a Stifle a Dreadnought into play.
Yeah.
Right. So like, you know, that's not totally off. I don't know if it's good enough. I don't know if it's fast enough. I mean, you do get blown out by removal spells, but you can like sort of pick your spots. It still loses the Swords to Plowshares, as does everything. But if that was the case, if they didn't Swords it in response, you do gain a fuckload of life that maybe you can, you know, maneuver around and do stuff with. But the other side is it's whenever Kemakai Enduring or another cat enters. And coincidentally enough, earlier this year, they gave us both an equipment and a cat on the same card in Lion Sash.
Oh, yeah.
So Lion Sash is both an equipment and a card. And a cat. So in all of your equipment tutoring, like I assume that this would be a Stoneforge Mystic deck, obviously.
Yeah, and you want to play like Sigarda's Aid and, you know, like all the stuff that Hammer Time plays in Modern,
Yeah, it's one of those things where, like, I've always... Sigarda's Aid is one of those cards where it's very good at, like, producing your fast kills, but it's also absolutely fucking miserable to draw in multiples unless they remove it, right? It's one of those things where I don't have enough experience with the deck, particularly in Legacy. I know it's a Modern deck. I know it has, like, some amount of fringe crossover because you get Mox Open when you get some upgrades.
Yeah.
But in terms of, like, is Sigarda's Aid actually powerful enough for Legacy, considering the interaction that Legacy offers versus what Modern offers? I'm not totally sure, but it does strike me as the card that is the biggest 10 or 1 in the deck. Like, Sigarda's Aid is absolutely a game-ending spell when it actually converts, or it just rots in your hand as a multiple, but doesn't do something like Thalia, where it can attack and block, and so drawing multiples isn't necessarily always bad. It's like, once you have one, if it's there, your second one is dead until they remove it, or the game ends, which it's super lopsided, right? And I think Kemba has a means of like flattening that out so it's not as bad. And then the fact that it also gives you some amount of grind in the late game, if you're playing Mox Opal and all of the stuff that like the 5 mana to grind and make a 2/2 cat that can then suit up all your equipment is pretty good. Think about it, like if you go into the play pattern early, you're like, okay, I'm going to play the Stoneforge Mystic, I'm going to tutor up a Cauldra. If you get the Cauldra in play and then they remove the Cauldra token and now you just have the 7 mana thing sitting in play not doing anything, Kemba Kai Enduring does, one, let you equip the Cauldra back on, similar to how it would be for a sword. But also, if it's already on the board, it can then do it from then too, because it can just pay 5 mana, make a 2/2 cat, and then equip that cat token.
Boom. Yep.
So there's a lot of flexibility to the card. It would need testing, right? Because it's a legendary creature. It's going to be soft to Karakas, but at the same time, you can also protect it with Karakas. So the ETB of like protect it, untap, slam it back down, equip the artifacts, an equipment to it. Who knows what other equipment makes sense for something like that? But yeah, there's a lot of interesting space that this card gains. Yeah,
it's a great space to design in right now, or to brew in, I should say.
The fact that it's a legendary creature gives you the access of Karakas, which that deck would already be playing anyway as just like a flexible land. So I'm high on Kemba as like, if a card could actually port Hammer into being like, you know, Legacy's new Infect, if Infect doesn't get enough tools, I think they will. But like, I could see it being another space of like another aggro Legacy deck now that you have Kemba. And then there's already an equipment cat that you were playing as a one of anyway, but now you can play it as a four for both an equipment and a creature. And that gives you more interaction with the graveyard. There's a lot of tools here that feel like they're coming together on paper. It's just a matter of if in practice it will actually be able to convert.
I'm all about more combat-based combo decks. I think that's the best, that's the most fun space that Magic the Gathering lives in. The next card I want to talk about is Grill Red.
You want to talk about Mercurial Spell Dancer right next to it, my guy.
Of course, but I got to go up to Scroll Rev Defector Mite, which we skipped.
Wow.
That is a 1/1 legendary artifact creature, Phyrexian Mite, for 1 white mana. It has Toxic 1 and cannot block, but it has Phyrexian White and tap. Choose a color. Another creature you control gains Toxic 1 and Hexproof. It cannot be blocked by creatures of that color this turn.
Yeah, so it's like a nice little...
That's like an amazing mom for Infect.
Yeah, it's not only does it have Infect in itself, which is delightful, but the fact that it lets your other creatures get through, this is one of two one drops that really level up Infect, I feel like.
Yeah,
and it'll just be a matter of like, is it good enough? It'll be one of those things like, is it actually good enough? You know, all of the stuff is Phyrexian and all of the stuff are still X1 or X1s that they got additions well, to,
that,
right? So
1-1 matters in that deck too, and we'll get to that eventually.
No, I get that, like, you have the Pendlehaven as like a way to like pump it. Yeah. Pendlehaven's not going to work with this. It's still is toxic one. It's only ever toxic, toxic one. But
keeping it alive with Pendlehaven is the thing.
I was saying that, like, because they're all Phyrexians and they're all X1s, like, Plague Engineer is still a nightmare.
Yes, but that is true.
You know, the fact that you're just getting a bunch of level up scrub is obviously an excellent one, just to be able to, like, if they play this on one, it's like, okay, it's just going to do one damage if without pump spells, if you're not producing something to block it. But then the fact that it just gets stronger later in the game of being able to push other creatures through is really important.
Exactly.
What's nice too is that, like, it's one of I've seen people be like, yeah, you give your elf whatever, and I'm like, dude, you can give your Ink Moth Nexus protection. I think that's really the
you can give your Ink Moth Nexus protection. But I think one of the things that, again, like, I always talk about this when we're talking about Infect, the fact that this one, it costs 0 mana to activate, you know, 2 life, sure, tap it, pay 2 life and activate this. It also gums up that weird sequencing where, like, I'm like, okay, well, you have a creature that can block my Glistener Elf. I'll give this protection from that creature's color, let's say red or whatever. And then you're like, cool, I'm going to bolt your creature in response to that. And I'm like, cool, I'm going to pump my creature with Invigorate. And now it's getting through for 5 unblocked.
Yeah,
you know?
It is one of those positions where when you activate it, it compels your opponent to act, and then you can play one of your protection spells or whatever. So, like, the play patterns are really supportive of this.
Yeah.
The one difference is, like, we'll see how the mana base shakes out. I know that you already splashed white and you have white off of Noble Hierarch, but, like, does Hierarch stay in the deck?
I think Hierarch definitely stays in the deck. I think this might be, for a while we were playing Teft 3. I think this might be, like, something we were like, where we decide, like, do we want to play Teft 3 or do we want to play this guy? I keep wanting to call him Skrillex so bad.
Yeah, it's probably might as well. I think that, like, this card is great. It'll see play in that deck. It's just a matter of, like, is this plus the other tool of Rot Priest that we'll talk about, like, are those strong enough tools to bring the deck back into competitive fray? Like, obviously, like, it's still a deck. It's, you know, it's fringy, but it's definitely not in the top tier by any means, but it's getting a bunch of new tools. So we'll see if they're good enough.
All right. Let's talk about your butt of mine, Mercurial Spelldancer, which is a Phyrexian rogue for a 1 and a blue. That is a 2/1. It cannot be blocked. Whenever you cast a non-creature spell, put an oil counter on Phyrexian Spelldancer, Mercurial Spelldancer. Whenever Mercurial Spelldancer deals combat damage, you may remove 2 oil counters from it. If you do, when you cast your next instant or sorcery card, copy that. You may choose new targets for the copy.
So here's the important. There are a couple of very subtle things about this card that matter. The first one is that after you have your oil counters, when you cast your next spell, it is not a may to copy it.
Just copy it.
Yeah. If you do, when you cast your next instant or sorcery spell, copy that spell. So you have to copy it. You may choose new targets for it, but it's not one of those things you can't, like, stack up a whole bunch of oil counters and then try and unload them. Like, when you cast it, it will copy it. So, like, once it has 2.
Phil, it says whenever it deals combat damage to a player, you may remove 2 oil counters from it. So if you remove the oil counters, that thing goes on the stack.
Let me rephrase. You can't, like, stack up, like, 4 oil counters and then try and copy the same spell twice.
Got it. I understand what you're saying now.
It's not like you can't, like, storm off on, like, a bunch of oil counters.
But you're not, like, stuck.
Then flare your opponent with, like, 6 copies of the same spell.
You're not stuck. The thing I was worried about is we're not stuck, like, casting Daze 6 times.
Right. Yeah. No, yeah. Sorry. Let me be clear. This is not a combo card where it's like, okay, I'm going to bolt you 6 times. So there's been some hype on this card. I see people going back and forth. I think this is the card that has people most split. I see Nate don't like it. This feels very, very similar to Dreadhorde Arcanist, and he ain't about it.
Nope.
So
I think the thing that to me is the most interesting about this card is living in an initiative meta, this is unblockable. And so that makes it interesting to me, because if you're a deck that normally would have issues with initiative cards, you can play this and basically continue to trade off initiative and do it that way.
Yeah, I agree that, like, the can't be blocked is definitely important text in this world that we're in, particularly because it's It's unfortunate that, like, you know, it doesn't really ask much. You're like, you got to deal with combat damage to a player. Well, how am I going to do that? Oh, well, you can't block me, so I guess this is all working out. It's just, it's not really all that elegant. The combination of this, like, let's think of the play patterns here. The deck that, if any deck can abuse this, the best one is obviously Blue Adelver, as always. It's always going to be Blue Adelver, because this is also a card that incentivizes you to play with as many free spells as you can to generate the oil counters as fast as you can, so you can double up as fast as you can. So, you know, if you play this on two, play a Bauble, gets a counter. Next turn, you get to cantrip before you go to combat, put a second oil counter on it, attack you, remove two counters, snuff out both of your creatures, and, you know, here we are, right? And that snuff out will also then put the first oil counter on it to keep this thing going. Yeah. So that's also part of it, is the spell that you copy is also the first oil counter back on it to go again. So, I mean, there is certain sequencing that you have to do to, like, leverage the payoff, but the thing is that the payoff is really, really powerful. And, you know, it's also like the idea that, oh man, it's just going to double up your cantrip. But the thing is that, like, that's really powerful. That's insane. Like, doubling up your cantrip is effectively going to produce an extra EI for you. I think this card is quite good. It being an X1 might be soft, you know, where Dreadhorde Arcanist was a 1/3, like that did matter. Like, I don't know if in this world it matters. It's blue, which means that it's also soft to Pyroblast. I mean, there's some give and take here, but I think this card is real. And of all the things that we've shared so far, it's the only one that I can see that actually has homes, because there are blue decks in Legacy that want to cast spells. Right?
Cool. Yeah, of course. All right, so our next one is Geth, Thane of Contracts. We finally get Geth. He is a 3/4, which is relevant. For 3 mana, that's 1/2 black. Phyrexian Zombie, Legend. Other creatures get -1/-1.
Other creatures you control.
Other creatures you control. Huge, huge. That's a big difference. And then for 2 black and 1 and tap it, return target creature from your graveyard to the battlefield. It gains, if this creature leaves the battlefield, exile it and activate this as a sorcery.
Yeah, so it's just you tap and reanimate,
like,
it.
Corpse Dance, right? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It's a very powerful effect on a 3/4 in a world where you can just, like, Dark Ritual it out. It's one of those things where, you know, it's tough because it's a mid-range card that's doing mid-range things, and the stuff that it wants to do, this requires 6 mana, where you can just Entomb Reanimate for 2 mana, and where because of that, I think this card's going to get left by the wayside, and I don't think that there's, you know, random value creature black decks that's going to be strong enough for this that it can also support, you know, having their creatures get -1/-1.
I think the big thing about this is the -1/-1 stops you from doing, like, shenanigans with, like, Snapcaster Mage, or, like, effective shenanigans with Snapcaster Mage and stuff like that. Like, getting little guys out of the yard using this as sort of a value creature to, like, just, like, oh, I'm going to bring back a body and get the ETB effect, because so many of those things are X1s.
Yeah, that's what I mean. It's like, if this card sees play, I imagine that it would only work in a world where if you actually do get to untap and then activate it, the game ends right there. That's it.
I don't know. I think it could see play as just, like, a value creature. I just think that a lot of the cards that you're looking to do that with off the top of your head are not conducive to dying as soon as they come into play, right?
There is a world where, like, have Chaos Defiler now, and that's kind of cool when it goes in and out. But, like, at the same time, like, the goblins just do that better. So I don't know. Are we in that? It's a powerful effect. I just feel like it's just over the line of being something that's going to be effective, because there's more optimized ways to do that in Legacy.
Speaking of optimizing, we should quickly talk about our sponsor for this video, Moxfield. Moxfield.com is a great deck building website. You can check it out at Moxfield.com. Obviously, you can use it on your PC, on your Mac, on your phone, on your friend's phone. Basically, it's just one of the all-time greatest and sleekest looking deck building websites in the game. Really put it to the test last week when we Phil and I were working on that budget deck list. So if you didn't get a chance to check that video out, you should really check that video out, because we did a really good job of showing you some of the better features of Moxfield. But you can also check us out at moxfield.com. /EternalDurtle/DurtleMagus/ForceOfFill. All of our decks are down there. And, you know, it's a great place to share your decks. Moxfield.com. Next Moving up, on. Let's talk about Mental Misstep.
No, you want to talk about Skrull's Hive.
Minor Misstep. Talk about Skrull's Hive, actually. Yeah.
Man, they just printed Bitter Blossom in white. pretty powerful. Yep. You know, your stuff can't block, but it also doesn't. You lose one life and create a 1/1 colorless Phyrexian Might artifact. You just create a Skrelv. Create a Skrelv. And then those creatures, if once they're corrupted, which means once they have three or more poison counters, then all those creatures have lifelink. Like, they can't block, but they can't attack.
Yeah, this is pretty great, actually. And the fact that, you know, the three or more poison counters is not that tough to do, especially if you're just creating one every turn. And then the lifelink thing, like, completely mitigates this whole problem. You're going to be gaining way more life than your opponent. This is great because in a world where we don't know what the fate of planeswalkers is going to be rules wise, and there's going to be like a rules change pretty soon. And I think that what they're going to do is say, planeswalkers count as creatures for spells that like destroy a creature. I think that's what's going to happen. And in that world, enchantments that create creatures are going to go up in value as like a control,
Don't tease me. Don't be like, yeah, one day you'll be able to swords to plowshares.
I think you will. I think that's what's going to happen. But that's pure speculation.
That's pure speculation.
I think that already that so cards like Bitter Blossom, Dreadhorde. What's that other one? Dreadhorde something? The Horde one? There's one from the War of the Spark set that makes like a zombie army every turn. And Skrull of Tithe, I think all these cards are ripe to be played, and I think this is probably the best one in a color that I don't know if this color needs it, but you know, I can see Phil sideboarding this in against other decks that are control decks.
Unlike Bitter Blossom, I mean, granted, like the Bitter Blossom tokens are flying and can block, like that's really powerful.
Yeah.
But like the downside of Bitter Blossom was that the life loss would eventually catch up to you if they had a way to stabilize against you producing a 1/1 flyer every turn. This one, if you just keep getting, if they can't stop the initial swings, like if you can actually corrupt them and then they do have lifelink, they do perpetuate themselves, right? Like you can't just swing in, gain the life, and then it'll just make it next turn. If you have ways to use those bodies otherwise, you know, like sacrificing whatever, like, I don't know, man, like a Bitter Blossom in white seems really powerful. Like it's a really efficient token engine. It gives you an ult with Toxic One. That means they effectively have double strike if they can connect to your opponent. Like that's powerful. Like it's doing damage on both ends, but Toxic is half the amount of time, like half the clock. Yeah, I think Skrull's Hive is it will see play. It will see play. It's not going to like overhaul anything. It's not going to be the wow, the format needs to full on adapt.
Expect to lose to this in a tournament one day.
But it will be a powerful spell where you're like, oh shit, I can't deal with enchantments, and then they're just going to produce 1/1s every turn, and my point removal sucks now. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So next up is Minor Misstep.
I love it.
A 1 blue for a counter target spell with mana value of 1 or less.
Everybody's low on this card. Everybody's like, this card's not. What do you? I'm gonna play so much of this card.
The fact that it's 1 or less and not just 1 is pretty huge. You actually have to pay 1 mana for it. Like, I don't know. This card as a Phyrexian card with less utility is banned in this format.
Well, that's a big deal though. Being able to like play your own thing and steal their mana on Phyrexian mana, like Mental Misstep isn't banned because it countered 1 drops. It's banned because you could do it for free. Like there was, if Mental Misstep cost 1, it would be this. Like it would be just a worse version of this.
I think that this card is a card that we're gonna see so much of that we're gonna start to hate it. It also counters itself, just like Mental Misstep does.
Yeah, it does. I think that there's a difference, though. I think this is closer to the Spell Pierce style space of flexible 1-mana counter spells. The thing that I like about this, though, I mean, I'm in a world now where the cards post-board that I care about a lot, you know, and I've seen most people have been like, I don't think this is going to show up in, like, you know, the Delver decks, and I agree. But they're like, maybe it'll show up in the control decks. And I'm like, the thing that I like about this is that it's a single mana blue spell that can counter Pyroblast. Granted, like Blue Blast does that too, but like Minor Misstep has other utility. And that other utility, at least for, you know, people like control players like I am that, you know, have adopted Triumph of St. Catherine. One of the things that I had, like Triumph of St. Catherine came out, and then I had to start caring about a card I never cared about before, which is Swords to Plowshares. Never cared about that card before, but now I do care about it. And having a 1-mana answer to your source of plowshares, regardless of how much mana you have up, is really good.
Yeah.
So thinking about, I think about this similar to as like this is a split counter spell that can hit both Pyroblast and Swords to Plowshares, regardless of how much mana you have up, and then incidentally can also hit your cantrips, like
and Goblin Guide and Lightning Bolt and like every other like Delver of Secrets.
Here's the thing, you know, yeah, like, this is a powerful card. Like it's another one of those cards, as is every card, that, you know, it's really, really heavily favors the die roll. Like if I win the die roll and I'm playing against Delver and I get to play this and then hold up this to counter your one drop, like the times where I've gotten to be on the play against Delver and Mystical Dispute their Delver on 1, it feels amazing.
Yeah.
Right. And just having this also incidentally to do that will also feel very good. I think that this is going to be a major role player. I'm going to have it as like anywhere from 2 to 4 in my 75 when it first comes out. I'm very excited about it.
Speaking of cards, you're going to want to counter with Minor Misstep. Venerated Rot Priest is a 1 mana green, toxic 1/1 that is a Phyrexian druid. And it says, whenever you a creature you control becomes the target of a spell, target opponent gets a poison counter.
So there's so much text on this card that is subtly so good. Besides being a 1/2 surviving plague engineer is important, but it's also a way to poison your opponent outside of combat, which I know that you are going to really enjoy having.
Look, I've already messed around with like building a deck with this on Moxfield as far as like just adding this as like another creature to like regular infect decks, which I think are still the best home for this card, as opposed to like trying to play storm, like a storm deck that is worse than storm.
Here's something that I think is so cool. I've seen people that are trying to like play this with like the storm spell, so that when you copy and then the copies trigger it and go on the stack, just like a subtle card that might actually be interesting to use in infect now is as a couple of flex slots here and there as just a way to remove a blocker is Gigadrous.
Yeah.
Because if you stink Gigadrous, you can go, okay, I'm gonna tap your one creature. Also, I'll use the other two to target my creatures to give you 2 poison in the end step, untap, and now you're tapped down swinging. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
that is a pretty powerful sequence that Rot Priest just actually enables really, really well.
Not to mention the fact that every time, like, there are so many times that I play Infect where I get you to, like, 8 or 7 or 6, and I have, like, you've removed enough of my guys over the course of the game, and you've stabilized now, right? Being able to just cast this guy, and we can talk about, like, you know, do we want to start playing Cavern of Souls because Phyrexian is a thing now? As soon as I cast a spell, because I can hold priority and cast a spell on my own guy, and then do it again and do it again and do it again. If I just happen to have like a couple of spells, that's it. You lose the game. Like that's a trigger on the stack. It doesn't matter if you get rid of the Rot Priest. You've got 3 more poison counters, you know? So many times where I've been like, I just need to get through. I just need to attack. I just, you know, like, and I can't. And this card solves that problem. Now, do I want 4 of these in my deck? I don't know. I'm playing, I think, 2 in the version I'm messing around with right now, and I'm playing more Green Sun Zenith because Green Sun Zenith gets this guy.
This card strikes me as I have the deck Infect, you know, like I don't play it very often. In this world with this new card, I would be sleeving up this as a 4 of, and then just playing a whole, like, I would really be reconsidering my ability to do like the turn 2 combo kills. I would be playing a bunch more interaction, because similar to, you know, you were playing Source of Plowshares in the board
dive down
for like, but like, well, no, I mean, one thing that you can do too is like, this is similar to like, I remember for a long time before we had Triumph, a common play that I would have to sometimes do in order to survive to improve my life total is I would have to use Source of Plowshares as a life gain spell.
Yeah.
And so I would like, it would suck. I would hate being in those positions, but there are positions where it's like, if your opponent tries to burn you out and you're at 3, you're like, okay, I'm going to Swords my Snapcaster, go up to 5. Okay, I'm down to 2. Do I get to untap? Like, That felt bad, but like that was utility.
You have to sometimes, yeah.
And it's tough in Infect now, where it's like, okay, if I don't have enough pump spells, then I can't actually cross the finish line. Rot Priest kind of lets you get away with more interaction, right? You can play a more interactive controlling game if you want to, because at any point, if your opponent is close, you can Swords to Plowshares your Rot Priest or your other creature to poison them, right? It's similar.
Bonus Sword to Plowshares does not matter for you for the most part, because if you get their guy, their life gain doesn't matter at all to you.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like, it can remove the blocker, but now Rot Priest also lets you use it as a way to burn them out. So it's a removal spell and a burn spell with Rot Priest. Rot Priest opens up the door for all those kinds of effects. Very similar to what I was just talking about with Gigadrous. So it's like, I think that it opens up so many cards utility-wise that the deck would never even consider really before as main deckable, because it needed to play a certain density of pump spells in order to combo kill your opponent. Where Rot Priest just lets you get away with a bunch of stuff that you otherwise wouldn't be able to.
I haven't done enough research to like really delve into stuff, but I'm pretty sure there are a few like 1 mana cards that target more than one creature. So sort of like Symbiosis is a card. It is 2 mana, but it's from like Urza's Saga or Urza's Legacy, where it's like choose 2 target creatures. Those target creatures get +2/+2. I'm sure there's stuff like that that say like up to 1. I think there's like a lot of stuff came out in Theros that probably is probably red, but like it's like up to two target creatures get +1/+0 or something like that. So those kind of spells to me are like perfect for this, because if you get down Rot Priest, hold priority, and you're like, okay, I'm gonna target my Glistener Elf and the Rot Priest, and you just took four, you just took two poison, and then I'm attacking in, and you're dead. You know, like I think there's a lot of great scenarios with this card where like just cards that we just weren't building with before, you know?
Yeah. There is space for all of that to like really reinvent the deck in a powerful way. It reminds me similar of like the talk of when, you know, you have combo elves and then you have like the more fiend artisan controlling style builds that's sort of trying to abuse the same things, but does it in a different way. That's like just more mid-rangey, more interaction. And this strikes me as something that can open up that space for Infect, whereas like Infect now isn't just a matter of like, okay, I just wait until after combat and then kill their creature to try and like maneuver around their spells.
And
like,
it also puts your opponent in a weird position where they have to worry about like, did they use the removal on the wrong thing? You know, like obviously they don't want to take like five Infect to the face, but like in a situation where they're like, well, I've got extra mana and I need to kill something on the board, I guess I'll kill your Glistener Elf. And then the next turn you cast this guy and like pump him three times in response, you know, and kill your opponent. Like it creates unease amongst your opponent. It allows them to make the wrong choice.
And then there's also space in a world of like, you know, now you have Skrelv, which can offer protection from colors, and that opens up space too. I mean, I remember there was a time a long, long time ago where Infect played Distortion Strike, which is the rebound spell. Yep. So it's +1/+0 and can't be blocked. And so it's like, if you put this on it, or if you target a creature, they get a poison, you attack them, they get two more poison, you rebound, they get a poison, and then you attack again because it can't be blocked and they get two more poison. That by itself is, you're over halfway there. And then speaking of like getting your payoffs on poison, if you want to hop down to the next card, it's Brand? Distorted Curiosity?
Yes, Distorted Curiosity is a 3-mana sorcery that says corrupted. If this spell costs two less, if an opponent has 3 or more poison counters, draw 2 cards. So this is sort of like the thought cast of Infect.
Yeah, it's just a 1-mana draw 2 if your opponent is at 3 poison, which should be effectively done by what, your second turn, your second or third turn. And if you're playing more interaction, like all of those things to be able to recoup cards really cheaply while you're interacting with your opponent and effectively like dancing around them. I mean, the deck getting an overhaul seems super live. This is a legacy power level spell. And in fact, Rot Priest is obviously a legacy power level spell. I mean, it's getting a lot of tools.
And that's the other thing is two for one-ing that this card is doing is one of the things I think Infect struggles with the most, because sometimes you're just putting so much into like one play where like you're like, okay, you bolted my guy in response, I'm gonna cast Invigorate, and then they're like swords it, and you're like, all right, I just lost 3 cards, I don't know what to do. And this card can sort of get you back into the game in a fair way.
The deck was already playing some number of Sylvan Library over the course of its lifetime, right, as a way to just recoup cards, like, because you know, its life total was just like, whatever, I'm trying to get you dead. And I think that this might be just a nice smooth way to like, you know, be able to go back and forth, actually trade. Like, the problem with Infect is like, if they remove your creature and you're just sitting on 3 pump spells in your hand, you're like, well, I'm fucked. Like, I have nothing going on. And they get to sandbag, figure out what they next want to do to find another removal spell. And this, it's just a different deck. It's a different deck that gets to fight on different axes, and it's going to be really powerful.
I know this is going to upset you, Phil, but this might replace Ponder.
You guys were already cutting Ponders.
I was already on three Ponders. I think this card
would replace it. You were
already
off of it, yeah.
Okay, so next up we've got Varan Executioner Thane. This is a 2-mana 2/2 that's 1 and a black for a legendary Phyrexian Vampire. Whenever one or more other creatures you control die, each opponent loses 2 life and you gain 2 life. This triggers only once per turn. I'm only putting this here because you were talking about it, Phil. Were you serious or not?
Oh, don't get me wrong. This card sucks.
Oh, man, you got me. What are you talking about?
This card's bad. You know what this card does, though? This card does
pure troll move.
No, this card does make me get a little bit giddy inside, because one of my first decks ever was Mono Black Vampires with Colossier Highborn, where you would play Viscera Seer, Bloodgast, and Colossier Highborn and like burn your opponent out doing sack loops. This card is exactly Colossier Highborn, except it's not as tough on the mana because it's only 1 black instead of black. And then when it dies, you get the free drain without having to play black. Colossier Highborn said you had to play black. These are all cards that these are bad cards. Don't play them. But I do like the idea of, you know, at one point when I need a break from...
Straight trolled me on that one.
When I need to break from anything else, I'm going to put together Mono Black Vampires with 8 Colostria Highborns and just try and have a good time. And, you know, this card is, it's triggers only once per turn. So it's like, I'm going to have my Visceral Seer and my Vrain and my Blood Ghast, and I'm going to sack it, scry, deal you 2 with my fetch land in play on your turn. I'm going to fetch, I'm going to bring back the Blood Ghast, I'm going to sack it again, I'm going to scry again, I'm going to drain you for another 2. It's going to be delight.
All right.
And then my opponent's going to be like, all right, dude, seasoned Dungeoneer.
You got me. Okay. So our last card that is monocolored is Shieldred's Edict. Shieldred's Edict is an instant that is 2 mana. That's 1 and a black for choose 1. Each player sacrifices a non-token creature. Each player sacrifices a creature token, or each player sacrifices a planeswalker. This card,
everybody's so high on this card. I don't get it.
Hoses Dark Depths is all. That's all. That's everything.
Bro, yeah, it's one of those things. It hoses Dark Depths, but you actually have to play the card. Like, this card actually needs to be in your deck.
It's true.
Like, you have to. You know what this? You know what this card is? This card is like Calamity's Wake from Dominaria. Calamity's Wake was 1 and a white for an instant that said exile all graveyards, and then players can't cast non-creature spells or something this turn. Exile it. And I remember when that card came out, the Storm Bros came out of the woodwork and were like, oh my god, it does the what? It exiles the what? And then I can't cast any of the non-creature spells anymore? Like, what do you mean? That's my whole deck. My whole deck is functionally non-creature spells and using the graveyard. What do you mean? This card's unbelievable. And it sees 0 play.
That's how I feel about leeches.
Powerful effect, but it has to actually be in your deck. This card, like, oh yeah, like this card, like when this is good, when you put your Merit Legion to play and I have this in my deck.
You
like,
just wait, man. People are going to start playing leeches and I'm going to feel the same way about this card.
You best believe I'm going to make you sacrifice a token. And then my opponent's going to be like, cool, dude. Welcome to the X4 bracket.
Yeah. Of course.
So this, like, sacrifice a non-token creature. Okay, it's literally any other edict, and it's like sudden edict is just better because it can't be responded to. If you sacrifice a planeswalker, cool, dude. I'm already up a card. My planeswalker drew a card. You're behind. You're already behind.
So now we'll move on to the multicolored creatures or multicolored cards. First one I want to talk about is Atraxa Grand Unifier. That is a 7-mana 7/7. That is 3 colorless, a green, a white, a blue, a black, so no red, for a 7/7 flying, trample, vigilance, death touch, lifelink creature. When it enters the battlefield, reveal the top 10 cards of your library for each card type. You may put a card of that type from the revealed cards into your hand, then put the rest on the bottom of your library in random order. I mentioned this card because can we ban Grizzlebrand yet? This is a really cool card to reanimate. And it almost does a Grizzlebrand impression. Almost.
I mean, I've seen Vanderham has been experimenting with this in natural order. Play this as a natural order target because, you know, it reloads. Here's the thing. This card is very similar to Niv-Mizzet Reborn.
Yeah.
But Niv-Mizzet Reborn asks you to play with a bunch of spells that aren't legacy
playable.
Bunch of
bad cards. Yeah.
Whereas this, even though this is more expensive, it's 7 mana instead of 5 mana. It's doing similar things in that it's like, it's a very big relevant body that will draw you, you know, 4 or 5 cards, or between 3 and 5 cards, probably. Here's a way to, like, conceptualize this if you haven't seen Atraxa actually happen yet. If you've had Throne of the Dead, the Throne Room in Initiative against you, right? Your opponent flips over 10 cards and then chooses a creature. Yeah. Imagine if they flipped over those 10 cards and just put 6 of them into their hand.
Yeah.
That's the way to visualize of, like, what that actually looks like.
They're going
to
get a land, a creature, a sorcery, and an instant at the very least.
At the very least. Like, yeah. But, like, that's the way to, like, actually perceive, like, how powerful this is. That's how many cards they get to look at to flip over. And then they get to choose if they see multiple versions of, like, if they see 2 sorceries that are different, they get to choose of those sorceries, which is better for their position.
Not to mention if they have, like, an artifact creature, they can choose that as their artifact.
Yeah. And then this also already has a body of being able to both, like, vigilance and lifelink is a big deal. Death Touch less so, like, it's, you know.
Also, Urza's Saga is an enchantment.
Urza's Saga is an enchantment. I mean, who knows? Like, I don't know exactly.
You're getting Urza's Saga playing this. That's a bridge too far, I think.
I think because Grizzlebrand exists and is just going to be better than anything they ever make for the rest of time, the actual biggest deal about this card is that it's green.
Yeah.
It's good and it's green. So,
all right.
It's in that space.
On to the next one, Tyvar, Jubilant Brawler, is a 3-mana planeswalker that is 1, a green, and a black. And it says you may activate abilities of creatures you control as though they had haste. +1 is untapped target creature. -2 is mill 3 cards. Then you may put a creature card with mana value 2 or less from the graveyard onto the battlefield. I only mention this card because of our maxim, never sleep on three mana planeswalkers. And I know we're past that in the world, but this, the like haste thing, it just seems like there might be some kind of a weird combo that this card can pull off. And I just wanted to mention it as like, keep your eye on this.
Yeah. I mean, the biggest thing that I saw about this card was I didn't know that Tyvar's character was that he was a scrapper.
He just punches. Yeah, dude just punches.
Like we've only seen one other card and he was just like a remade Nissa Ravain where he like cared about elves and that was it.
Yeah. Likes to punch stuff apparently.
I had no idea that he was like, you know, let's just straight up brawl, bro.
He's the Rocky Balboa of Dominaria.
It's weird because like if he's the jubilant brawler and he just loves to get into fights, I'm like, why aren't you red? But
right?
I don't know. Fuck. Yeah. Fuck. I don't know. Shit.
Because fight is a green mechanic.
Yeah, dude. It's green. Yep. Yeah.
All right.
So
next
it shows
up,
what I know.
We've got, we're going right to the artifacts from here. I didn't see anything else. Maybe we could talk about Venser Corpse Puppet for just like a second, but I honestly don't think that card is good enough because you have to like have proliferate in your deck. So I just don't know that like you're going to have a ton of proliferate synergies.
I really want this to let Malkator Purity Overseer be a lesson for wizards if they ever are concerned about legacy cards. This card's actually it's one blue white Phyrexian Elephant Wizard. Sweet, it's a legend.
Yes, it says, elephants.
When it ETBs, you put a 3/3 golem into play.
Mm-hmm.
And then at the beginning of your end step, if three or more artifacts enter the battlefield under your control this turn, you make another 3/3 golem. Play this, you make a golem. If you put two more artifacts into play, you make another golem. So that would be 7 power. And then every turn that you metalcraft yourself, you get to make another golem. But the difference though is the fact that this costs one white blue instead of like two colorless and a color means that
about playing this in artifacts blue if it was just mono blue, but like I looked at this card, I was like, I could cast this, but like, do I need to?
Even if it was mono blue, let's say it was one blue blue, right? If you can't soul land it, it's not just free. Let that be a lesson for everybody over at WotC. If you don't want to have, you know, the soul land
just want us
break
to play it,
everything,
don't, yeah, just
don't
add
make
mana
it a
to
single
it.
Pip. Make it double pip,
or do
yourself.
if it's a card that would break the format,
just double pip your spells, and then the soul lands are not going to be the egregious enablers that they are.
This has been your Magic Design Moment by Phil Bleckman.
Double pip.
All right. Sword of Forge and Frontier. It is a sword. It is a 3 mana artifact equipment that gives a creature +2/+2 and pro red and pro green. And when it connects to a player, you Chandra draw twice, exile the top 2 cards, and you may play those cards this turn. And you may play an additional land. So if you hit a land, you could pop that into play.
You know, finishing out this cycle of swords would have been cool if they didn't print stuff that like made them so they weren't playable.
Yeah, they're just not like
they're too slow.
I want to throw this out as like a don't like go nuts trying to get this card, but that's neat.
I've lost a Sword of Fire and Ice over my lifetime. So much have I lost a Sword of Fire and Ice.
But how many times in the last like 4 years?
You can't put the card in your deck. There's other things to do.
It's garbage.
Batterskull doesn't make it into main boards.
They're not even playing ever since what? Khadra Complete came out? They're not even playing it.
Batterskull doesn't make it into main boards. None of the swords will unless the sword needs to do something so overwhelmingly powerful. It's just not, none of the swords are good enough anymore. It's just too slow. Unfortunately.
All right, we're on to Staff of Completion. This is another 3 mana artifact that says tap. So I'm going to say pay one life. Destroy target permanent you own. Pay 2 life. These are all tap. Pay 2 life, tap. Two, add a mana of any color. Tap. Pay 3 life. Proliferate. Tap. Pay 4 life. Draw a card. Then you can pay 5 mana to untap Staff of Completion. I don't see anything happening with this card right now, but it's got a lot of stuff it's got a lot of text. So
here's the thing.
It's worth mentioning.
If this card comes into play and your opponent somehow combo kills you with it, you were dead long before it hit the table.
Yeah, I feel like they can just do this with several other things. And the fact that you're paying life to do this stuff, it's like there's yet another hoop for them to jump through of gaining enough life to make it happen.
If this card ever shows up from you across the table, you're either in round one of an event and you just got an unlucky pairing or...
Well, or a very lucky pairing.
Or you're in the X6 bracket.
All right, here we go. Soulless Jailer is a Artifact creature Phyrexian Golem for 2 mana, 0/4. And it says, permanent cards in graveyards can't enter the battlefield. Players can't cast non-creature spells from graveyards or exiles. I think that this falls under the same thing that you said about Shieldred's Edict. This card has to be in your deck in order for you to want to play it.
It's too slow.
Yeah, and it doesn't cost one, so like, why wouldn't I just get like Grafdigger's Cage?
Permanent cards can't enter the battlefield. You're going to look at this while you're like, your opponent is going to grief your hand and leave it.
Yeah.
Because you're dead before it touches the table.
Yeah, it's going to leave it in your hand after he.
They're going to be like, oh, that's a sweet new card, dude. Grizzlebrand you.
Pretty cool.
It's not a legacy card. If it shows up in Legacy and does a thing, it's because your opponent's deck shit out. We should talk about Mirren Safehouse.
I think Mirren Safehouse is a great card to talk about. That is another 3-mana artifact. As long as Mirren Safehouse is on the battlefield, it has all activated abilities of all lands, all graveyards. First off, shout out to Phil Gwynn because, dude, this gets the Griffin combo going, man.
Yeah, dude. Mutavault and Griffin Canyon in your graveyard make this an infinite big Griffin.
This is the card we've been looking for. Forever to break Griffin Canyon.
Finally got there. Also, for everybody who's been speculating as to like what's going on in the artwork, like that head looks like pretty similar to old Emrakul there. There are five silhouettes in the photo, and those five silhouettes are the original five artifact lands, which is referencing that this card cares about lands. Those are not the Eldrazi.
What are the five artifact lands?
Seat of the Synod, Great Furnace, all those cards.
Okay, so I thought do you mean like Mishra's Workshop?
No. So you're like, sorry. I've seen people like where they can only see like the three like really clearly, and they're like, oh man, are those the Eldrazi? They're not the Eldrazi. That's the silhouettes of the artifact lands that are in the safe house.
Ancient Den, whatnot. Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, that's fair. I don't know. Like I feel like this is a card that just adds some redundancy to decks that are doing that thing.
I mean,
the fact that it has activated abilities and not like all the abilities, or is not like a copy of all cards all. Lands in all graveyards means that Dark Depths doesn't care about this card.
I mean, it's a pretty powerful thing to be able to go like, okay, if I have a bunch of shit in my graveyard and this is in the bay, it's like, okay, this is also a Maze of Ith, so I can tap and lock down your creature, or I can also
Thespian Stage or Vesuva. Well, I guess Vesuva doesn't matter.
There is some cool stuff that you can do that to like circumvent certain things, right? Like have like Lake of the Dead being able to sack a land to add 4 mana is pretty sweet without actually having to sack the first land up front. You know what I mean?
Yep.
Like that stuff is cool. Like I'm sure there's so many lands that could do so many things that are probably suck, that it's just like there's a bunch of lands that Black Lotus between Lotus Field and Lake of the Dead and a bunch of stuff like this could be a pretty powerful mana boost while also having a bunch of utility. Like this is a card that I think actually has a lot of potential. I don't have the bandwidth to figure out in lands what that could be, but it seems pretty solid to me. I feel like the gone are the days of being able to play Punishing Fire, so like creatures are just too good. So I feel like Mirren Safehouse, and then if you have multiple Mirren Safehouses on the table doing like a whole bunch of shenanigans,
the way
that I think about this is like if you're in lands, or if you're in a lands build and then you have Mirren Safehouse, it's effectively just like Yawgwill. Like you just have access to your graveyard in any capacity that you want for as long as you want it, as long as this is on the board. Like, pretty good.
Final artifact, Surgical Spellbomb is a 1-mana artifact that says, 1, sacrifice Surgical Spellbomb to draw a card. And it says, 2 and a blue, sacrifice Surgical Spellbomb to return target creature to its owner's hand and draw a card, activate as a sorcery. I mentioned this card because it costs 1 and Urza Saga exists. Do we want it?
I don't know. Aether Spellbomb's better.
I think Aether Spellbomb is better, but the effect you're getting off of this is technically better than Aether Spellbomb because you can do both. Why not do both?
Costs two more mana. That's a lifetime.
Yeah,
I just
mentioned it because it costs 1 and it has an effect of a card that we're already playing in the deck, and it might maybe be worth checking out. But now we're moving on to our lands, and we've got the Seed Core, which is a land sphere. It taps to add 1 colorless mana, or you can add 1 mana of any color and spend this mana only to cast Phyrexian creature spells. So that's infect, all the infect creatures. Or if your opponent's corrupted, which means they have 3 or more poison counters, you can give a 1/1 creature +2/+1 until in turn, activate only if opponent has 3 or more poison counters. This card, it's so hard to determine whether or not like you would play 1 or 2 or any of these at all in like infect, because that like Pendlehaven effect, but like plus two, plus one is kind of great.
Yeah, I mean, this card would need some testing, but plus two, plus one is so much better than plus one, plus two in for infect creatures. Like that is
not to mention like this allows you to cast Skrillex in your Simic deck.
It is a substantial like plus two, plus one versus plus one, plus two is a substantial difference. I don't know how badly you would need the green mana. I mean, if you would play this. Like the green mana can cast your pump spells, but it lessened a number of pump spells to play other things. Maybe this card, I think that like the plus two plus one is just, I get that you have to be corrupted already, but like that is just so huge. It's just so much more.
All right. Next card is Mycosynth Gardens. It is a land sphere. Add a colorless mana to your mana pool, or tap one and tap it, add a mana of any color, or X and tap it. This becomes a copy of target non-token artifact you control with value of X. I don't know off the top of my head anything in 8-cast that I want to copy with this, but it seems like a powerful effect.
Here's what we're going to do, okay? We're going to open our 7. I'm going to play Mycosynth Gardens, all right? You're looking at me. I'm sitting across the board. I have a Mycosynth Garden. I have the rest of my hand. And you're like, Mycosynth Garden? What's Phil doing? And then I cast Lion's Eye Diamond. And you're like, oh, okay. And then Lion's Eye Diamond, notoriously, does not need to tap and sacrifice to add mana. You just sacrifice it. So what I would like to do is I would like to copy my Mycosynth Gardens. I'd like to tap it for free, make it a copy of my LED. I'm going to sack both of my LEDs. I now have 6 mana in the pool and access to, I don't know, fucking Passing Flames in my graveyard. And I'm just going to do stuff.
Yeah, that's ridiculous. Okay, I like this card. I'm glad I picked it out. All right, the next card. We've solved that problem. The next card is from the Commander set stuff. And I don't know that it's actually playable, but I wanted to mention it. It's Norn's Decree. Norn's Decree is an enchantment for 3 mana. That's 2 and a white. It says whenever one or more creatures an opponent controls deals combat damage to you, that player gets a poison counter. Whenever a player attacks, if one or more players being attacked are poisoned, the attacking player draws a card.
I mean, this you can get in positions where this card can effectively lock your opponent out from attacking you.
Exactly. Like, I'm thinking sideboard card for an infect deck where it's like, okay, now you can't beat me.
If you get them high enough, and this is where something like, you know, Norn's creatures or whatever having lifelink matters.
Yeah.
Right. Like if you can just sustain that they can no longer take any poison counters since there's no way to remove poison counters that are playable.
Leeches.
This card can lock an opponent out.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And that's the main reason why I want to talk about that. I think that's everything. Did you see anything else, Phil?
No, there's probably some other cards that we're not catching. I mean, I think the set is good. I mean, obviously, I think the only deck that's going to get substantial overhaul from this set is
Infect.
But yeah. I do think that there's probably some combo that we're not thinking of with Mycosynth Gardens. The most obvious and first thing that came to my mind was Lion's Eye Diamond because it's free and having access to 2 LEDs on turn 1 could be insanely powerful.
Yeah.
But what does the rest of that deck look like? But there is a world that Mycosynth Gardens does something even more powerful that I'm not thinking of. Mycosynth Gardens is the combo card. I will be most interested to see like what decks emerge because it exists. There's a world where like it's like you can LED, cast Mycosynth, copy LED, sacrifice it to like Echo of Eons, reload, and now you've reloaded with an LED in your hand. Or you could just like cast the Mycosynth, play the LED. Now you have 6 mana, sack them both, cast your wheel, and now you have 3 floating mana with a full new grip and just kill your opponent that way. I imagine that there's similar space in that world. Like it needs the LED.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't seem like it's too hard to do that. So we'll see where that shows up. I think like there isn't really any payoffs to spheres that matter. Like the sphere type doesn't matter right now.
No, yeah, I haven't seen anything about that. If you, as a viewer, as a listener, think that we've missed a card, I want to hear about it because I'm actually this set to me is like super cool. So comment down below. We'll add you to the drawing. As always, you know, don't forget to like and subscribe to the video. Check out Moxfield. What else? Hey, if you want to support us on Patreon, you also get added to the next drawing for that too. You can support us at patreon.com/eternaldirtles. And I think that's it for this week. If we see some new cards, we'll add them to the next episode. Have a good one, everybody.
Sit down for a match of magic, open my hand. Let's assemble the combo with Chancellor Protection. See a bunch of mana sources and an evil demon. But a faithless looting is conspicuously absent. Got a mulligan.
Shit.
Ship.
Fuck.
Back to London. I'll bother keeping when I open up a turn 1 demon. Going down to 6.
5.
4.
Fuck.
3 cards I'll keep. Then I'll say good luck, have fun. And then entomb a fatty, reanimate Grizzlebrand. Uh-huh. We Rihanna Meg Grizzle Brand. Rihanna Meg Grizzle Brand. Rihanna Meg Grizzle Brand.
Yeah, super cool, you did it.
Pull this demon from the graveyard onto the board. It's the most interesting gameplay that could have happened, I'm sure. You didn't have a counter spell, so I will draw my whole deck. I'm so unlucky, zero lotus petals, fuck statistics. Will I cast on mass? Trash. Children of Corliss, keep on masturbating. Richard Garfield should've just won. You cast in tomb, exhume. Arcana cruelty, sacrifice a creature, draw, discard, and drain you for three.
Reanimate Grizzle Brand. Rihanna Meg Grizzle Brand. Rihanna Meg Grizzle Brand. Rihanna Meg Grizzle Brand.
Yeah, like Reanimator is totally a macro archetype.